You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
And we're happy to welcome in for this next segment of the show, Lauren Coodley, who's written a book called Lost Napa Valley. Lauren, welcome in. Let me make sure I got your audio captured here. Can you hear me okay right now?
Yes.
There it is.
Perfect.
Bingo. All right. Let's jump in. Lauren, this is not your first book about Napa and its history and culture and society. How many have you written now?
This is the fourth.
Fourth one. And what got you started? Why are you so interested in the history of Napa to do all this work?
So I came here when I was 24 to be a part-time teacher, and it became my home. I've lived here for 45 years since then. When I came, I was invited to start teaching the first women's studies courses at Napa College, and was encouraged by Abby Trevithan, who was then running the Women's Reentry Program, to create a class called Women's History. And I really had no background in history or in women's studies, which barely existed at that point. So I researched it myself and invented the class. And I wanted history to be something that women could really relate to. So I kind of tossed out the tests right away and had students do projects where they did histories of their families, of their mothers and grandmothers, and created essays or sometimes children's books about their mothers and grandmothers. So many of those had grown up in Napa, the mothers and grandmothers. And I started to gradually realize all the untold stories that there were about this place where I was teaching students. And I think that was the inspiration. I wasn't able to start writing till my own children grew up. So it was a long time of being a teacher and collecting stories and clipping things out of the newspapers. We had some great columnists in the Register, the writing about history, like Louis Azzetti and Jane Smith. So I just learned and listened for a long time before I started writing.
Mm. Yeah.
Louis Azzetti, I haven't heard that name in a long time. The flashback moment.
I feel very grateful to those people and the work they left us, and that's kind of why I believe in the written word and the columns that they left behind. Jane Smith gave me all her columns to use and to quote from.
Yeah. I should mention, by the way, that this book is not available until March the 1st. We're getting a preview and an advanced look at Lost Napa Valley. There are things that, when I page through this book, I'm sure many people would have the same reaction. Taylor, you would too, I think, flipping through. There are pictures that pop up, just so in case you want to do what I was doing, flipping through. There are pictures that pop up, and I immediately go, oh, yeah, I forgot all about that. Mm-hmm. And one in particular, in your first chapter, you talk about farms and ranches, and that really reflects on the rural character of not just Napa Valley, but even the city of Napa not that many years ago. The one that I remember out of those that you talked about was the Von Hewlett Ranch, which, only closed out, 15, 20 years ago?
Yes, in the 90s. Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the ones that I had a particular personal experience with, which I didn't have with many of these places that I wrote about because they were defunct, by the time I got here in 75. Mm-hmm. But the Von Hewlett Ranch, yes, it went on for probably 15 or 20 years, and it was a ritual in my family to take my children there, as it was for so many people in town. Mm-hmm. So actually, one of my students did an interview with Ruth Von Hewlett in the early 80s, and I kept that interview all those years, and then when I started to write my first book in 2003, I sent that interview to Ruth's daughter, who said a lot of it was inaccurate. So I, have to always check and double-check my sources. I have an interesting story about that related to William Jacks that we might get to in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. The Tucker Farm Center. My parents used to talk about going there all the time for events and dances. And these photos are amazing.
Yeah.
The farm centers?
Tucker Farm
well,
Center.
Tucker
yeah.
in particular.
Oh, yeah.
My dad mm-hmm. was born and raised here as a, he's the third generation of a family. So he tells me stories all the time of how they lived right off of Highway 29 and they would play baseball on the highway and get off maybe every 10 minutes for a car, one car that would be going by.
Like, well, I should have interviewed you. I would have put that story in the book.
Oh, my dad has them all. It's, yeah, it's pretty incredible. That's like one of my favorite things is just sitting there and listening to him tell stories. Yeah. And
that's great. Well, I should say that there are 100 stories that aren't told, you know, that aren't in this book for every one story that's in it.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
One thing I was limited by is that I usually focus on people in my book, but the... the series focuses on place. Mm-hmm. So when I asked my publisher if I could publish a bunch of my articles that I'd written for Marketplace, and they said, well, only if they deal with places that are lost. We want it to be part of our series called Lost.
Mm.
So they said, you know, if it's still there, it doesn't count. And if it's about a person, it doesn't count unless it's about a place where they lived. So I had to... tailor my material to that idea of place.
Mm-hmm.
But, little challenging because most of my books were about people up to now.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting refocusing for me.
Oh, look at Napa High. Mm-hmm. That's a cool picture of right. Napa High. That's where my grandpa went. My goodness. I can't wait to read this.
So I was able to use Napa High because that was a picture of the old Napa High building.
Right.
Right, so it counted. As long as it's a building that has, now, like now it's the district offices, right? And that mm-hmm. was the old Napa High. Mm-hmm. And then the interesting thing is, Barry and everybody else listening, there's things that people are nostalgic about that we had in the 80s. For instance, the clock tower.
Oh, my gosh. I remember the clock tower.
Nobody really misses it, though. They just remember it, don't they?
See, if you talk to young people, they do miss it.
I was a little kid. That thing was so cool.
Oh, yeah. So grotesque.
So I tried to address the nostalgia of young people as well as older people, you know, and write about the things that meant a lot to people. For instance, the Wheelhouse Roller Rink down on Imola.
Oh, my gosh.
Very
I totally
special
remember
place.
That, too.
River Park Shopping Center.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes.
Then it turned into Marlowe's Club. When I was a kid, it was Marlowe's Club.
Yes, I remember Marlowe's. So I tried really hard to get pictures from Wheelhouse, but I wasn't able to. I did get some incredible quotes from people who... posted on the Facebook page. There's a page just dedicated to the memory of that Wheelhouse roller rink.
Really?
Mm.
And no one wanted to give me pictures, which is fine. I understand. You know, people value their photos, and I wasn't able to get photos, but I did get the permission. I always ask permission of anyone that I quoted. There's, I think, probably the most poignant quote in the whole book is about somebody that used to go to the Wheelhouse and how she felt when it closed.
Mm.
Very, very poignant, very thought-provoking. So you all will see that in the book.
Okay.
The to go back a little further in Napa's history, the cover of your book has a photograph of the Napa State Hospital from
yes.
way back in the day. And I bet 95% of people in Napa would not be able to tell you what that building was if they saw
wow.
this picture. Right? Because it's long gone, and it was absolutely majestic and gothic and scary. Describe what happened there
scary.
A little bit.
Well, everybody should read this book called Confessions of Madame Psyche that I used to use as a textbook when I was a teacher. It was a novel about a woman who ended up in Napa State Hospital during the 40s and recorded her story. She was judged to be crazy, although in those days... you know, anyone that was unconventional ended up there, or alcoholic. And, you know, it was called the castle in those days. And it was, you know, very gothic, very kind of majestic, but also creepy. It's a really good novel. Again, The Confessions of Madame Psyche is what it's
wow.
called, by Dorothy Bryant.
Wow.
Dorothy Bryant came to Napa when she published a book in the early 80s, and I had her speak about her research at the state hospital to a bunch of psych techs that I was teaching. So they all learned the history. There, at that time, the hospital had a historian named Ellen Brannick who did tours of all the secret places at the hospital. I myself worked there briefly and in the late 70s before I had a full-time job. And, you know, it was a very different place. For one thing, it was a workplace for, you know, it was one of the biggest employers in Napa. I mean, almost everybody knew somebody that worked at the state hospital back in the day.
Hmm.
So those buildings, that castle was leveled in, I believe, the late 40s, early 50s.
I wonder why. So
because it was deemed architecturally unsafe and moldy. And there was, you know, there were reasons that it was taken down.
It's probably entirely unreinforced masonry. So, total earthquake
disaster. Right. It had been built, you know, in like the 1870s and hadn't been remodeled since then.
Yeah, astonishing. I remember a story back in 1988 when I was pretty new to Napa. We had a whole series of interviews with people who had lived here their whole lives. And most of those people, of course, have passed away since then. One of the stories that was related was running into someone in San Francisco and saying, "Oh, how's your family? How's everybody doing? How's your sister?" And this person responded, "She's up in Napa these days." And the other person's reply was, "Oh, I'm sorry." Because they thought that meant she was in the state hospital.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. That's what Napa was known for a long time.
For when I first came here, everyone used to laugh that it's the land of fruits and nuts.
Along the way, there's a lot of in this book that reflects on the transition from sort of typical small town America with nothing that special about it to becoming this really world famous place because of wine grapes and the wine industry. Interestingly enough, we retain the concept of being a rural place, but a completely different kind of a rural place, like posh rural now, not, mm-hmm. you know, not blue collar, boots in the dirt kind of folks. Do you think there's been a loss? Have you documented a loss of that true, you know, we might call legitimate rural culture, authentic rural culture?
That's such a thoughtful question. What I realized is, and I realized this, I don't know, about 10 years ago, I wrote a poem called Seven Kinds of Snakes. And it was about, you know, interviewing somebody who grew up here out in the country, poor, who knew seven kinds of snakes when he was growing up. And so what he realized is when land was inexpensive, people that didn't have much money could still raise their children in the country. And by country, I mean in nature, where a kid could just go out, you know, cross the meadow and play in the creek all day. That's what I think has been lost. That's one of the things I feel, you know, along with the loss of small family businesses, I feel very keenly the loss of that ability of moderate income people to raise their children in some kind of nature, you know, natural environment in the country. And I interviewed several people who were very generous to share their memories of growing up in the country here and what that was like. So I would agree with you, and I think it's probably, you know, we can't get that back.
Yeah.
I don't think that's recoverable.
I was just thinking the other day, one of my observations over the years has been that when the city of Napa was planned in a broad sense, that they didn't allot enough land for parks because I've talked about that at different times. Other cities have done a much better job. But in general, those were cities that came along later, and maybe they weren't rural by nature. I can imagine back in the, you know, 1930s, if you said, well, we need to plan for more parks, more experience with the outdoors, interaction with the outdoors, people would have said, well, you know, we're living in interacting with the outdoors all the time because it's a rural community, and maybe they didn't feel that need.
That is exactly the case. I've often pondered it myself, raising children here and now grandchildren. The lack of those kinds of spaces is so notable, and it's exactly for the reason you're saying, Barry. Even things that were here when my children were young. For instance, the mini golf. Now, you would never call that rural. It was right on 3rd Street. But you could play miniature golf, and then they would rent you a little boat, a little paddle boat, for $2 an hour. And you could take children out on the river for $2 an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, we did a birthday party for my daughter out on the river. Mm. And that was a beautiful experience. It wasn't rural, but it was a way of accessing the natural landscape, mm-hmm. that didn't involve a lot of money, that didn't, you know, wasn't anybody could do it. And I found a wonderful article about the last proprietor of the mini golf before it was destroyed. And I'm so grateful to all the writers who chronicled the end of things, like Bel Air Bowl, Cavon Drive-In, the mini golf, mm-hmm. Various stores like Brewster's, and many others that I write about, Giovannone's and Valerga's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really agree with you that, in my first book, I learned the story of how we got Alston Park and Westwood Hills through the efforts of a couple of citizen advocates in the 60s. But there could have been a lot more. And I think especially up Valley, it would be great if there was more than just Napa State Park, if there was more places that were recreational and mm-hmm. nature spaces that were available to people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people agree with you on that one.
So you mentioned Cavon Drive-In. I think I would be remiss speaking here on what was often called Cavon Radio back in the days. Talk about that a little bit. Younger folks wouldn't even remember it.
Right. Isn't that cool that we had a drive-in here once? It was right by your station, as you know, probably. It was on Foster Road. I was lucky enough to go there before it closed. It closed in about 1981. It was the popular place. I have a lovely article by Jim Ford from the Register describing what a typical date night would be like, where you would pick up your girl and you'd go to the drive-in, and then you'd go to a drive-in restaurant, and you never had to get out of your car. And, it was the beginning of couples having cars to have private time in the 50s as more people got, access to automobiles. So it was a special ritual. Let me flip. I can't remember what year it was open, but I think it was open in the 50s. I have that in my book. But I know it closed in the 80s.
Yeah.
And, it was a landmark of young people's lives.
Yeah, for sure.
I won't worry about when it opened, because I want to talk about, if that's okay, something that I just realized recently about being a teenager in Napa. So I watched the movie American Graffiti, which is about a town very similar to Napa. It was filmed in Petaluma. Mm-hmm. It's about what the 60s were like. And it reminded me a lot of what I've read about and heard about downtown Napa. And one of the striking things is the night belonged to the teenagers in those days. The teenagers took over the town. Hmm. Everything was theirs, because, of course, there were no tourists. So it was their town, if that makes sense. The downtown were the places that they shopped. Jefferson was the places, where their school was. And, while the adults were home, the teenagers were running around having adventures. And I just kind of think how different it must be for teenagers now when our downtown is full of people from out of town, full of strangers,
mm-hmm.
and not shops that most Napans, can afford to shop at, and how much is lost in that when you don't have a town that's just for the people that live there.
That's a really interesting observation.
Mm-hmm.
This good stuff. It's called, Lost Napa Valley. Lauren Coodley is the author, our guest here. It's from the History Press and Arcadia Publishing, and they're doing a lot of this work with local communities and capturing history that otherwise might get lost. Full of photos and really interesting here. Available starting March 1st. Will it be in local bookstores?
Yeah, I was going to mention they're having me do a Zoom book talk at Napa Book Mine on the 4th of March. there. So I'll be on Zoom talking about the book, and the Historical Society is doing the formal launch on February 25th. So those are both Thursday nights at 7. So they're both Zoom events, and I hope to have as interesting a conversation as I'm having with you two.
Aw, shucks. That's nice of you. Lauren, thanks for being on the show. It's great to have you. We learned some things and enjoyed some good memories there.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
You bet. Best of luck with it all.
Take care, both of you.
You
bye
too.
Bye.
Too. Bye now.
Bye.
All right.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.